Schneider. We're back from lunch, a quick lunch for the jury in the trial, the murder trial for Chicago police officer Jason Van Dyke in the 2014 shooting death of black teen Laquan McDonald. We understand that a sixth witness has now been called, an attorney for the Chicago Police Department is what I'm told. But the attorneys in the case, they are now at sidebar once again with the judge. So we're just waiting for whatever's being decided to wrap up. Previously today, we've heard from several different witnesses, a couple who work in the juvenile detention system in Cook County, and they testified to past experiences they'd had with Laquan McDonald, where he was somewhat abrasive with authority, got a little violent, had to be restrained, that kind of thing, trying to set a tone. But of course, the prosecution pointing out that the officer had no knowledge of any of this when he confronted McDonald on that fateful night. We also heard from a police sergeant who talked about fears that police officers can have based on a police alert. But more about that later. This is the witness. Let's listen.
Right now, approximately 92.
And where does the number 92 come from? Is that an arbitrary number?
I'm sorry, establish the dates that they're teaching it, when they started teaching in 92. Because if it is before your client went in there, it's not material or relevant now.
You taught at the Training Academy in 2004?
Yes, sir.
And currently, I believe you said that the training is 92 hours?
Yes. It was raised in the year 2017. It was 78.
Okay.
It was approximately 78.
So
at the time.
In 2004, it would have been 78?
It would have been.
Okay. And where does that number come from?
That comes from the Illinois Training and Standards Board. We have a mandated curriculum. So it is mandated the topics that we teach and the hours in each particular topic.
Okay. And you have lesson plans for teaching the recruits, is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay. And these are, it's a core curriculum, right? The same lesson plans for each hour of instruction?
Yes.
Okay. And if I can show you what I previously tendered to the state, it is Defense Exhibit number 15. And I will mention, Judge, it's a two-page exhibit. Can I approach?
Yes, go ahead.
Ms. Harris, if you can look at that and tell me if you recognize what that document is.
Yes, this is part of the materials in our law handout, part three.
Okay, and is that a true and accurate representation of the lesson plan materials contained in part three of your instruction?
Yes.
Okay. What year? See, that was that?
Yeah, in 2004, or in that time period.
No. Correct about the correct thing. You have to establish that it was your client that got this, otherwise it doesn't have any meaning.
Fair enough.
Yes, this is an accurate assessment. This is the statute, 720 ILCS 5/7-5, and the same statute was in effect for many, many years, including 2004, Your Honor.
Okay,
thank you.
May I approach? Jason Van Dyke was in the Training Academy in 2001. So the same questions I asked you about 2004, you would agree with me that these training documents apply?
The training documents as well as the number of hours.
Thank you.
Your Honor, if I can publish. Well, you mentioned 2004, but you didn't mention 2001 as those documents being in effect at that time, so correct it.
Okay. The documents that I just showed you, which refer to the Peace Officer Use of Force statute, these documents were part of the lesson plan in 2001, is that correct?
That is correct.
Your Honor, at this point, I'd like to publish the first page of that exhibit. And Ms. Harris, you see what I have, what we have just published, which is not yet published, I don't think. Okay.
Yes.
This TV's not on, Your Honor. sure if I got an answer from you, but you recognize this document?
Yes.
And this is the training document regarding the peace officer use of force statute. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. And then I'd like
one
to...
One of them.
I'm sorry?
This is one of the documents.
Great. And I think I'm going to show you the second one right here. And that's the second page of the statute in the training document. Is that correct?
That's the second page of what we have in the handout.
Okay.
Yes.
And Ms. Harris, what I want to ask you now is, is there a worksheet that the recruits are required to kind of interactively fill out regarding the language in this statute?
Yes.
Okay. If I can mark the next exhibit as Defendant 16, I've given the state a copy, and may I approach you?
Not until I know what it is.
This is a worksheet.
It's a blank worksheet?
It's a blank worksheet.
Oh, certainly. Okay, fine.
Ms. Harris, if you could take a look at what I've marked at Defendant Exhibit Number 16 and tell me if you recognize that document.
Yes, this is the use of force worksheet in hour three of 4 hours at that time.
Okay, and that's an accurate copy of the lesson plan worksheet that has been taught to the recruits in 2001?
Yes.
May I approach you? Your Honor, at this point, I'd like to publish this document as well. Ms. Harris, you see what is on the screen, correct?
Yes.
Okay. And if you can just tell the ladies and gentlemen of the jury what this is showing.
This is basically answering the question of when a peace officer may use deadly force in the state of Illinois.
Okay.
And it's describing the four justifications in 575.
Okay. And I see that there are some blank lines listed on this worksheet.
Yes.
And what is the purpose of those blank lines?
To get the officers to, you know, participate in their learning.
And is that filled out by either you or the officers?
It's filled out by the officers while I'm basically doing the lecture.
And the language that is put in those blank lines, which we'll get to in a moment, is that the language that comes from the statute, the Peace Officer Use Force statute?
It is consistent with the statute, absolutely.
And if I can... The first sentence is, when may a peace officer use deadly force?
Yes.
And then there's a number one there.
Yes.
And it says, reasonable and necessary to prevent death or great bodily harm to self or another.
Yes.
Okay. And would you characterize that as a defensive life policy or defensive person policy?
Well, that's not the policy. That's actually the state law. That is the first of the justifications for deadly force.
Okay.
The answer is that.
Okay. And then you said it's the first of the justifications for deadly force.
Yes.
So certainly the or indicates that there are other justifications.
Yes.
Correct?
Yes.
All right. At this time, let her testify.
Okay.
So there are four justifications for deadly force in this statute.
Okay.
There's actually five. There's one in addition in 57-9. But for 575, which is the peace officer's authority to use force to make an arrest, there are four. It's much easier for the officers to remember four as opposed to 1, 2, A, B, and C, as is indicated in this chart. So I usually have them renumber them as we go through through the lecture.
And
the language is the same.
Thank you. The second line there reads, reasonable and necessary to prevent the defeat of an arrest and person to be arrested.
So that language actually travels down to each of the following three justifications. So the second justification would be reasonable and necessary to prevent the defeat of the arrest, and the person to be arrested has committed or attempted to commit a forcible felony involving the infliction or threatened infliction of great bodily harm or death. That would be the second justification. The third justification, again,
you know what,
language...
I'm sorry, if I could stick with the second one.
Oh, sir.
Do you still have that worksheet in front of you?
Or on the screen?
It's on the screen.
Yes.
So you don't. Judge, may I approach again, please, with Defendant 16?
Go ahead.
And if I can ask you, Ms. Sayer, Defendant 16, you talked about how you were going that you add language in the blank line area, correct?
Yes, we use the language of a statute to fill in the blanks.
Can I ask you how it is you train the recruits and what you write in that blank line? And, Your Honor, if I can have the witness write exactly what she writes in that training bulletin as well.
She can testify to it, not write it down.
Your Honor, I would prefer to enter this into the
thank you, what you prefer. All right, okay. Let her testify to it.
Okay. With regard to the, well, we'll publish it here. With regard to number two, where it says reasonable and necessary to prevent the defeat of an arrest and person to be arrested, and then A is has committed or attempted to commit
a forcible felony involving the infliction or threatened infliction of great bodily harm or death.
Your Honor, I'd ask permission of the court to write in what Ms. Sayers just testified to.
Bring me up to speed. Now, this is the worksheet, ma'am, for the police officers that are in training. Is that correct?
Yes, sir.
They write the answers on that?
So I write them on the board.
But who writes them on the worksheet?
On the worksheet, the officers themselves write them.
All right.
It's a participatory exercise.
Then, no, because the officers write the answers on the worksheet. All right. So you're attempting to do something that they don't do. You're putting your writing down or Ms. Zara's writing down. They don't. They put their own writing down on the worksheet.
Can I have Ms. Harris publish on the post-it note what she puts on the board with respect to that?
She can do it on a monitor, right?
That would be great if she could.
All right, you can do that. She can do it if you want. Mr. Herbert?
Yes.
She can annotate on the monitor.
Yeah, we have one of those special pens, Judge.
Oh, I didn't know that. Okay, that's great. Okay.
It's rather large.
I know.
Not working.
Okay.
It's not writing clearly.
I understand. I guess I would renew my request to allow her to write it on a sheet of paper with ink and then to publish that.
Ask her the questions. She should be able to, she should be able to annotate just on the screen itself, right?
Well, it's
put a blank piece of paper out there. She can annotate on the screen. She doesn't need the worksheet to annotate on. Turn it upside down. There you go. Now you can ask what.
Okay, so if I can have you, and I'll give you the pen again, perhaps that would be better with the bigger screen, if you can write what you would write has committed or attempted to commit. Not working?
This is not.
Do you want to clear that, Liz? Maybe you can try with your finger if that works.
No, an eraser, okay. That's better. Involving the infliction or threatened infliction of great bodily harm.
Thank you. And if you could write a 2A just somewhere on that. Thank you. And then there is another blank line for B, correct?
Yes.
And separated by a conjunction or, correct?
Yes. So the third justification for deadly force, this language, reasonable and necessary to prevent the defeat of the arrest and the person to be arrested, that same language travels down to the next justification.
So ordinarily... I'm sorry to interrupt. But you said the language carries down.
It does.
That's the reasonable and necessary,
It's in number two.
Reasonable and necessary to prevent the defeat of an arrest.
The defeat of an arrest, and the person to be arrested is escaping by use of a deadly weapon.
Okay. And I'm sorry, if you could write in there for B what you instruct or recruit them.
This is B.
Defines what is a deadly weapon.
Yes.
Is a knife included in that?
No, sorry. She's the one testifying what she's teaching, not you.
Okay.
Yes, we teach them things that are deadly weapons, include examples such as guns, knives, baseball bats.
Okay.
And things like that.
And that's derived from the statute?
Yes, that is defined in the statute.
Okay. And if I can clear that, please. And then following 2B, there is another conjunctive 4, correct?
Yes.
And then what do you instruct is written in C, and if you can write that as well.
So 2C, which is what I ordinarily have them renumber to number 4, should say... Again, the language travels down, so it's reasonable and necessary to prevent the defeat of an arrest, and the suspect otherwise indicates they are a danger to human life unless apprehended without delay.
Okay.
2008. It's okay. It's difficult to write my finger.
Okay, and Ms. Harris, if I can ask you, you defined it as essentially four separate justifications.
In this statute, there are four.
Okay.
In 7-9, there's an additional one.
Okay.
So legally, there's five.
And are these independent of each other?
Yes, each justification is independent of each other. So we
what
teach,
does that mean exactly?
Well, we teach officers that, you know, regardless of what offense they've actually committed or attempted to commit, there may be another justification that would authorize deadly force. For example, by use of a deadly weapon.
Okay.
Or, you know, even, you know, otherwise indicates a danger to human life. So those are all separate justifications we
okay.
teach them.
So reasonable and necessary to prevent death or great bodily harm to himself or another, that's a separate justification, right?
Yes, that's the one everyone remembers. That's the easy one to remember.
Okay.
It applies to everyone, citizens alike.
Okay. Thank you. Would you, or the next portion of the statute, is that applicable to police officers?
Well, the other three justifications we teach them basically are derived from the case called Tennessee versus Garner, which is the, you know, the landmark case regarding the officer's use of deadly force. And so our statute 575 was crafted to fit the guidelines set out in Tennessee versus Garner. So the last three justifications are what would comprise the fleeing felon rule.
Okay.
Basically.
And
they are only available to police officers. Citizens cannot utilize any of those justifications.
Okay, so if I understand correctly, even if it's not necessary or reasonable to prevent death or great bodily harm, that doesn't mean that a police officer can't use deadly force in other situations?
Yes, the Supreme Court and the Illinois law.
I'm sorry, the criteria here is what Ms. Sayre has taught, right? She's starting to get into the explanation of case law. It's what she's taught that's important and material in this case. Confine your examination and your answers to that.
Yes, Your Honor.
And you teach that these four sections are independent of each other?
Yes, we do.
Okay. And
we teach the fleeing felon rule. And we also teach how, you know, some of the background in terms of how the statute came about and what the rationale is behind the statute.
Okay.
Just because it helps their understanding.
And the or that separates the independent factors that you talk about, the four factors, what is the significance of the or that you teach?
That they are independent of each other.
Okay. The word imminent used in that statute at all?
No.
I have nothing further, Judge. Thank you very much, Ms. Harris. You can stay.
You teach the recruits that in very limited circumstances they can use deadly force, correct?
Correct, assuming it's reasonable and necessary.
Correct. And in any instance when they're using deadly force, you hammer into them that it has to be both reasonable and necessary, correct?
Reasonable and necessary to prevent death or great bodily harm for justification number one. For the other three, it's reasonable and necessary to prevent the defeat of the arrest.
But each of them, it either has to be reasonable and necessary to prevent death or great bodily harm, or reasonable and necessary to prevent an arrest.
The defeat of an arrest,
right.
Yes.
Thank you. But in no matter what the circumstances are, there is that qualifier that it has to be both reasonable and necessary.
Absolutely.
Okay. And you hammer that into them, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Would it surprise you that if If I told you that reasonable and necessary or some form of those words appears over 15 times in the three pages in the worksheets that you just reviewed as defendants 15 and 16?
That would not surprise me, sir.
It's bolded in places.
It is.
It's underlined in places.
Mm-hmm.
It is made very clear to them that it needs to be reasonable and necessary.
Yes.
And you spoke about Tennessee versus Garner.
Mm-hmm.
Part of what Tennessee versus Garner stands for is you can't just kill someone to arrest them, right?
Of course.
And it talks about, and this is in your materials, where feasible, some warning should be given, correct?
Yes, where feasible.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And so something like stop or I'll shoot.
Yes, there are times, however, we teach them that they won't have time to make such a warning. So
but
Tennessee versus Garner requires the warning if feasible.
Right.
Yes.
So if they have time, they should say that.
Yes.
They're also taught, and I'm quoting from your worksheet, or not worksheet, but materials on this defendant's 15. Note, still, that the court emphasized that the use of deadly force could only have been reasonable if all other means to apprehend the offender had been exhausted. You teach that, correct?
Can I see what you're looking at?
Yeah, absolutely.
Since you're moving.
Mark it, please.
Judge, this is my defendant 15.
Yeah.
This has been marked as defendant's number 15.
Correct.
Thank you very much.
What I'm looking at is in the first paragraph.
Yes, sir, take your time. When you're ready, just let me know. Okay.
Yes.
And so it does say...
Proceed. Go ahead. Proceed, Mr.
It does say, still, the court emphasized that the use of deadly force could only have been reasonable if all other means to apprehend the offender had been exhausted.
Yes, correct? That case said that,
okay.
Yes.
And essentially that's meaning that it needs to be a last resort if it's going to be used to arrest the individual,
okay.
Correct?
Overall, she can answer.
Yes.
Okay.
This also says...
There's no question.
Okay.
During the coursework, the recruits are also taught that if they use excessive force, they could be subject to civil and criminal penalties, correct?
During the law curriculum, yes.
And that could be federal and state-based charges, correct?
There's no charge of excessive force here.
Judge, they opened the door to his training in this.
Is that in those sheets, too? All right, yeah, overruled. Go ahead.
Additionally, they're taught on these sheets, ultimately, the burden is on the officer to explain why he or she reasonably believed that the firing was reasonable, correct?
Yes. In various proceedings.
No further questions, Your
Honor. Mr.
Briefly. Ms. Harris, you would agree with me that the peace officer using the force statute, the Illinois statute, that does not include any language about the necessity that this be a last resort before using force, correct?
I would agree with that.
Okay. And with regard to the reasonable and necessary, the first prong of that statute, reasonable and necessary to prevent death, great bodily harm to yourself or somebody else, correct?
Correct.
And then with the other categories, reasonable and necessary to prevent the defeat of the arrest. So the reasonable and necessary in that subsection has nothing to do with the defense of life policy in section number one.
No, it has to do with stopping the offender from getting away.
Okay, thank you. Nothing else?
No questions, Your Honor.
Thank you.
Defense. Call your next witness.
At this time, we call Dr. Staten.
record, Your Honor, to find a lawyer who signed this.
Spell your name.
Jeremy Staton. That's S-T-A-Y-T-O-N.
Okay. Are you, what is your occupation?
I'm a general surgeon.
Okay. And are you employed?
Self-employed.
Okay. Where are you? Where do you work?
I currently practice in Iron Mountain, Michigan.
I'm going to direct your attention to October 20th of 2014. Where were you working then?
I was a surgical resident at Mount Sinai Hospital, just down the street here.
Okay. Were you a trauma senior?
Yes.
Trauma senior, okay. And on that day, on that evening at approximately 10:28 p.m., were you working at the hospital?
Yes, I was.
Okay. Were you working a 24-hour shift?
Yes.
In what capacity?
The trauma senior is the senior most surgical person in the building, usually at nighttime. So kind of lead the trauma team.
Okay. Did a patient come in at that time, date, and location to your ER who was involved in a police shooting?
Yes.
Okay. Did you learn that patient was Laquan McDonald?
Later, yes.
Okay. Did you perform, well, strike that. Did you perform surgery upon Laquan McDonald's arrival?
Yes.
Okay. Did he come in with any vital signs?
None.
When you say none, can you explain?
Yes, he had no blood pressure, no respirations, no pulse.
Did he come in cardiac arrest?
I believe so. By the time I was able to see the heart, it was not moving.
Okay. So when you say he had no pulse, respirations, blood pressure, does that mean he's dead?
Yes.
What's the first thing you did when he came in?
The first thing I did was expose the patient to get to his skin, and then use a large scalpel to cut down from the sternum down to the level of the bed, creating a lateral thoracotomy, so you cut clear down sharply. This happens in seconds, very quick. And then I use scissors to cut the intercostal muscles, put in a rib spreader, and then I open up the chest cavity with a rib spreader. All in the attempt to get to the heart and the aorta. So the idea is to stop the bleeding as fast as possible.
And what did you find when you did this procedure?
So the left chest, there was no life-threatening injury, no large accumulation of blood, and there was no blood around the heart. So part of what we do is we open the sac around the heart and actually massage the heart with our hands, just like CPR, but internally, and we clamp the aorta to stop bleeding from major arteries elsewhere. So that's what I did. I started massaging the heart, clamped the aorta, but because there was no injury in the left chest, you carry the incision over onto the right side. It's called a clamshell. They use a specialized knife. It's kind of like a chisel with a hammer striking face on the back, and you hammer, literally with a hammer, and you hammer through the sternum and down and around, so you open up their chest like a car hood, so you can get to that right side of the chest to see if there's life-threatening injury over there.
What did you find?
I found a large amount of clot, a large amount of blood, and an injury to the right pulmonary artery.
And can you explain the injury that you saw in the pulmonary artery?
Yes, it was a bullet hole round. It wasn't like a large jagged hole from Sometimes people have internal injuries from bones or other internal structures that are hit by a bullet and then fly through. This looks like an actual bullet hole in the pulmonary artery.
Is the pulmonary artery part of the hilar?
Yes.
Did I say that? Hilar?
It portions of it, yeah. It exits the heart from the right ventricle, goes up to the lungs, splits. So one goes right, one goes left.
And you said you didn't see any blood in the left chest?
None.
Can you tell us how much blood you saw in the right chest?
A large amount. We don't measure these kind of things. We try to evacuate the blood and get it out of our field of view. And usually it's, probably about that much clot, the big double fistful, pull it out.
Okay. And how many liters of blood are in the body?
Five.
How many liters do you think are in these two handfuls that you just showed us that you took out of the chest?
At least three plus, probably.
Okay. And can you survive when you lose three plus liters of blood?
Rarely. His injury, if he had been shot with that injury right in front of us, the chances of him surviving are very low in any case.
What are those chances?
I don't know specifically if anybody's ever done a paper on that, but I would say less than 1%. It's a pretty catastrophic injury.
Was there enough blood in his right chest to account for his immediate death?
I would say so.
Did you notice any significant blood loss on the sheets?
I did not. I do not remember everything else being really messy, if you will. The only reason I remember that is I didn't change before I went out to speak to, I can't remember who I talked to, but whoever was waiting outside for him. And if I have stuff on me, I always change before I do that. So
when you say stuff on you?
Blood, tissue, what have you.
So you didn't remember blood on even the clothing?
I didn't get dirty.
Okay.
I'm on the patient's left, so my assistant over on the right-hand side, but I don't remember being really messy.
Significance of there not being a lot of blood on the clothing sheets.
All that means is that his blood pressure was probably zero before he had a chance to bleed from any of the other wounds. So you're not going to bleed from extremity wounds if your blood pressure is zero. You clot off, there's not good arterial flow. If you exsanguinate internally before that, does that make sense?
Yes, thank you. And one moment, please. Just one more. Did you see any significant blood loss from any other injuries?
In these trials, when they come in dead and you try to resuscitate them and it doesn't work, once you've given it minutes and you know that it's a lost cause, you count holes and that's it. So, no.
McDonald died from the injury to the pulmonary.
This is the same.
I didn't. What did Laquan McDonald die from?
Multiple gunshot wounds.
Did he die from the pulmonary artery injury?
I really can't say. So the thing is, if he didn't have that pulmonary artery injury, I don't know if he would have survived or not. If he had just that injury, he would have died, 99% chance. So if he had none of the other injuries and he got shot in his pulmonary artery, he would most likely be dead today. So I really can't comment. I didn't explore his abdomen or any of the other wound channels. I don't know what was hit or what wasn't.
But you didn't notice any other...
I noticed...
Well, she hasn't really led because she hasn't completed the sentence.
Right, I know.
Excuse, thank you. All right, because I'll complete the sentence, all right?
Did you notice hemorrhaging in any of the major cavities of the body?
The right chest.
That's the only location.
That's the only cavity I opened. Sorry.
He testified. It's in evidence already. If you would have said asked and answered, I might have sustained it, but that was a wrong objection. All right.
Answer.
So what do you have to answer?
Sustain.
I have nothing else.
So if he'd only been shot that one time, he might have survived. Is that correct?
You're talking about the injury of the right pulmonary artery?
Yes.
Not likely. So I've seen several of those injuries, and I've never seen anyone survive it.
So he probably wouldn't have survived, but he might have. Is that what you're testifying?
I'm testifying to my knowledge. It's such a catastrophic injury that to survive that injury, it's less than 1% chance that you'd live.
Now, doctor, that injury did not cause him to die immediately, did it?
No, it wouldn't be you're alive 1 second and then you're dead the next. It takes a while to bleed to death.
And he did, in fact, bleed to death, did he not?
Yes.
And you testified he died of multiple gunshot wounds, is that correct?
That's correct.
Because when you saw that body, it was riddled with gunshot wounds, correct?
Correct.
Now, you talked about him not being, he was not bleeding in the hospital, is that right?
Correct.
But that doesn't mean he wasn't bleeding when he was laying on the street before the ambulance arrived, did it?
Yeah, no, he very well could have, in the rig and on the ground, wherever else.
And if there was a large pool of blood on the street where he was laying before the paramedics arrived, that would indicate he was bleeding at that time, wouldn't it?
Yes.
And if that blood was literally running down the street from his body, that would be further evidence that he was bleeding before the paramedics arrived, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I mean, that would be evidence I wasn't on the scene. I don't know.
Thank you. I have no further questions.
Anything else?
Just two questions. Did you perform work on any other injuries other than the pulmonary artery injuries?
No.
Less than 1% chance of survival means he would have died within minutes, correct?
It would be within minutes.
And the pulmonary artery injury that he had?
Yes. Yeah,
he would have died within minutes.
It'd be very quick.
Okay. Yeah.
Mr. Cullen.
You know that Laquan McDonald was alive for at least 5 minutes before his heart stopped. You know that?
I didn't.
No further questions.
Good. You can step down. My understanding is this is the evidence for today.
Yes, sir.
Okay. Ladies and gentlemen, I do care, but if you get tired of me saying this, you're outstanding. All right? Everybody's been paying attention, so just keep up the outstanding work. Don't discuss. discussed this case with anyone? Have anyone discussed it in your presence? And again, remember, you walk into the room with the TV playing, that might have something on, you got to walk out. Don't turn the TV off, okay? All right, safe trip home.
All right, for the jury.
Okay, so it sounds like they are wrapping for the day.